Okay, so like so I have multiple sclerosis, and like I have this infusion I take twice a year. It costs $40,000 an infusion, just to let you know, and it gives me crazy side effects. So I had an infusion on Monday, and I forgot to record the first like 10 minutes we just did this, so I'm really sorry. But I've been bedridden for the last 3 days, but I feel pretty good right now, so I'm sorry about that.
It's okay, I get it.
Yeah, like, yeah. Taking $40,000 in medication. I take a $40,000 infusion. That's $333 a minute.
I know.
Keeps me out of a wheelchair, keeps me from going blind, keeps me healthy, you know, keeps me cognizant, keeps me, you know. So once again, sorry, we wasted that. But
it's okay. Well, now you got a little bit of more background on my life. But yeah.
I still think it's important, you know, like yeah. So like from what your mom, you got sick when she was 15. When you were 15.
Yeah, when I was 15. My mom had been like having issues where she like felt like she was going crazy and nobody believed her. And then she fainted in her room and I had to call 911. They came to pick her up. They checked her blood pressure and it was really low. Blood pressure machine ended up being broken. And then
from the ambulance people?
Yeah.
Dude. pay me. Get in line. Lawyers are in line.
Yeah. And then, so they took her to the hospital and they did an MRI and she had a huge tumor in her head. Next day she was in operation and they were like, yeah, it doesn't look good. And then they did like the biopsy or.
Yeah.
And it turned out to be glioblastoma.
Tell me more.
Glioblastoma is a super, super aggressive form of brain cancer. I think, like, the people who get it don't usually survive more than, like, 6 months. She had one really good year, and then after that, she was in hospice. But, yeah, like, the first year she got sick, she was really hopeful.
Yeah,
And she went to Duke because she saw on CNN or like 60 Minutes about this guy who is like works with people with glioblastoma and has made really good research. And she went to Duke with my dad. And basically he told her that there was nothing he could do for her.
So the best is like, yo, like, I'm like, this is, that's terrible.
I mean, yeah, she got the best case scenario. She got like a year before, basically what ended up happening is she stopped being able to walk and then she slowly like stopped being able to think. And then it would like get to the point where she was in hospice for a year and she was bedridden. She had a nurse and she just like slowly turned into a child, like a infant, like a Benjamin Button sort of thing. And like she was in the room next to me and it got to the point where she didn't even remember who I was when I walked into the room.
Right.
Yeah. But when all that was going on, like halfway through, right before she went into hospice, my dad had a heart attack. And then they found out that he had like stage 3 pancreatic cancer. Yeah. And then he got this thing called a Whipple procedure, which like most people don't survive. And he did. He's still alive. And my mother, unfortunately.
What is the Whipple? I've heard of it.
Yeah, they just like basically remove like a bunch of parts of your organs and like half of his stomach is gone. Like a bunch of like parts of his intestines are gone. Yeah. Gallbladder, like pancreas, and like he has half a stomach.
Do you know Sean in the meetings, tattoos all over his body?
No.
No, he's you see him around, like his tattoos, wears a hat. He lost 95%, 93%, maybe 95% of his large intestines.
Oh my God.
Yeah, because he didn't take a shit for like 4 months because when you're on heroin, you don't. And so like he doesn't have a large intestines.
Oh my God.
Pretty wild.
That is wild. That was like me at sleepaway camp.
Really? What happened there?
I didn't lose my large intestine, but I used to go to weigh at like sleepaway camp. And I think that's when I knew I was like a weird kid, is I couldn't poop in public restrooms. And so I didn't shit for 2 weeks. And
really?
Yeah.
But you knew like.
I knew I had to go, but I couldn't do it.
that's called a that's called like sticking to your values. You know what I'm saying? This is what I believe in.
Yeah. I do not poop in public restrooms.
Yeah.
That was a big no-no for me. So that's when I think I knew I was kind of like a weird kid, was at sleepaway camp. Yeah. I don't know what made me think of that.
Wow.
Yeah.
So your dad, that's pancreatic. How's he doing now?
He's okay. You know, he had to go through treatment again, but he's like in remission. He's 70, and I think it took a big toll on him, because it wasn't just like he got sick and he like owns his own business, and then my mom got sick at the same time. And as you know, like hospital care, like medication, like nurses, all that is so expensive.
Yeah.
And it just like was really hard.
Do you guys have insurance?
Yeah. We
what insurance guys have?
They had Anthem, and then my dad is like 70 now, so he's on Medicaid.
Okay.
Yeah.
But that's taking care of him though.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
As it should.
Yeah. But yeah, he's being taken care of, but it was hard. I have two older brothers, and my mom had me when she was 42 years old.
I was just thinking, because my dad is 73. Love you, Dad. And you're much younger than me. And mm-hmm. when you said 70, my mind was like, what? But now everything always makes sense. It always makes sense. Okay, so your mom's 42?
Yeah, she was 42 when she had me, like mid-40s. My oldest brother was born in 1990. My other brother was born in 1994, and I was born in 1999. Wow. And so by the time I was in like high school when all this happened, my brothers either were like, they were adults. Like they were like, one of them was in college, and then the other one, like he lived at his apartment and like had a job and was like already like establishing himself as a person. So so it was like just me and my dad, and we got really close during it. But that is when I started getting really into like drinking and kind of like pushed away all those things that my mom had been telling me. Cause my mom got sober a year before she met my dad. And then she met my dad. She then had kids, and like she was super.
How'd they meet?
They met on a blind date.
No way.
Yeah.
Lies.
They met on a blind date.
Okay. Who was the blind date connector? Sorry.
It was my dad, my aunt, Joanne. She was like working hot lunch at a Jewish day school. And then my mom's friend from like childhood was there. And then they were talking about how they both had like single people, and they're like, wait, maybe we should put them together, because like two Jewish people, let's put them together.
Dude, Jewish, I mean, man, yeah.
Yeah. And so they met, and they like, after 6 months, they got engaged, and until she died, they stayed together.
That's amazing. That's rad. How many years is that?
I think they were married for like 25, 26 years.
Sometimes you just know. I mean, like that's kind of what it is for, I mean, I can imagine for 6 months, they're like, this is my person.
Yeah.
That's what a beautiful thing.
It is really beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like if my mom didn't get sick, maybe I would not be as fucked up as I am. I feel like that sort of, I started having to look after myself a little bit more, and like 15-year-olds aren't really supposed to take care of themselves. My dad did the best I can. That's why I want to like say that. But, he also was caring for himself, and so I was like, okay, let's figure this out. So I feel like I had to grow up really fast.
Yeah, I mean, were your brothers around to assist and help, or were their lives already?
One of my brothers was living in LA, and he would come like every couple nights to help out with my mom.
Word.
And I was like changing her diapers and stuff, like really, like it was so brutal. And then my other brother was in college in Missouri. And then at the end of my mom's life, he moved back and lived at home with us until she passed. So,
I mean, no wonder Xanax.
Yeah.
Give me, what the fuck is this? Give me everything every day,
exactly.
All day, every day. I don't want to fucking be here.
Exactly. Like,
but I can be here with this.
Yeah. I can now, but it was like at that time when I was like 15, I was like, I didn't know any, I didn't even fully conceptualize death yet or like think about my parents ever dying until I was really old. So like when all that happened, it was so overwhelming. I was 15 and like, it was such a formative time. I like had just started high school and I just like, they prescribed me Xanax and like, I just was like, wow, this like numbs me out. And I ended up just like, I was still depressed. Like I ended up in the psych ward.
Really?
Yeah. I've been to the psych ward 4 times.
Four? Once. Let's go. Let's talk about it.
First time in the psych ward, I was 15 and I like went to the school counselor cause I'd like come up with this whole plan. And then she was like, you're not going home. And so I went to the psych ward. I was accidentally put into the eating disorder unit because they didn't have room for me in like the other units. But I didn't have an eating disorder. So it was just like I was put with these kids and they were all like really nice and like pretty normal, except for the fact that they, you know, had eating. Okay. They had problems with eating and stuff. But I still talk to some of those girls today. And so that was like pretty positive experience. But then like I got out and like the psych ward doesn't like cure you, obviously. And so then when I was 16, I went back to the psych ward.
How'd you get there?
It was the same thing of just like, okay, I have this plan, but I think I knew I wanted to live because like I would have all this plan set up, but then I would like have to call my dad and be like, oh dad, like I have this all set up. And I don't know if it was like I was super suicidal or if it was like I was looking for an escape or looking for like attention in a way of like feeling, I don't know. I think it was all just so overwhelming that it felt like the only like option at the time. And so I went and that was honestly a really terrible visit and I lied and said I was better so they would
Where'd you go?
I went to UCLA.
UCLA.
Yeah, I went to UCLA all the times I went to the psych ward and I've talked about this before, but I did have a girl come up to me and she said she had a knife up her vagina.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. I mean, like, you know, they call it a prison wallet. So yeah. Like, I mean, but like a mental ward wallet. Yeah.
Yeah. There was 3 girls there with knives up their vaginas.
What did you do?
I didn't tell anyone because I didn't want to, you know,
man, you're a real one. You
know what I am.
You're like, yo, all right.
See. There was a snitch though.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh man.
But there was also a girl that was like next door to my room and I started talking to her and then she was talking about how she used to like how she wanted to kill birds and that she like was gonna kill one of the nurses there and so she ended up being like homicidal a little bit and admitted to it.
Yeah.
And she was like in the room next to me. And so I was like, yeah, I need to get out of here. This is frightening. And this is like when I was at I've been to 3 high schools.
Okay.
So the second high school I was at, I came back and then I got out and I was like, okay, I'm fine now. And then I go back to school and I like take my finals and I tried telling my teachers, I was like, yeah, I was in the hospital, whatever. And then I get back after winter break and I see my final and I failed one of my finals. And I went up to my teacher and I was like, I was in the hospital. And she's like, okay, well, you should have just like figured something out with me. And I was like, okay. So I did what anyone would do in that situation, which is walk to the nearest restroom and try to drown myself in the toilet.
Yes.
Yes. I gave myself a swirly.
Is that what it's called?
Yeah. When people like dunk your heads in the toilet and like to bully kids, I bullied myself. Okay, so
you wanted to do a permanent swirly.
Yeah, a permanent swirly.
Yeah.
But then, like, somebody came into the bathroom, and I was like, oh, shit. And I got up, and I was like, ew. Like, wow. I didn't want to die there, but I told my parents, and then somehow my mom was, like, freaking out, and she called the school. And then I got like called to the dean's office and I talked to the dean and she basically told me I was a liability and that I needed to leave. So I got expelled. because I tried to kill myself at school. So
that's how caring.
I know.
You're gonna fuck our shit up here. You're gonna make my job so much harder. So I'm gonna fire you from my roster.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And then I ended up finding going to this weird independent school. And I was I got to graduate a year early. But when I was there, I met a girl whose sister was a club promoter. And so we started going into she would start taking me to clubs at 17.
Like 21 clubs?
Yeah. Like Hollywood, famous people, yeah. Bottle service.
Any name? Sort of remember any club names or anything like that?
I won't say any club names, but I'll say some of the people in attendance were Owen Wilson or Leonardo DiCaprio, okay. Beverly Hills, sort of area. But I don't even know if some of these places actually fuck it. I'm gonna say it.
Yeah, let's go. Did you see the sign?
Yeah. Doheny Room. I don't know if that's still a thing. And then there was Bootsy Bellows and there was one more, but they're gonna get off easy because I can't remember. But
yeah.
And my friend's sister was Asian. Mm. And I showed her ID, and obviously I didn't look at it, and I went in, and it worked.
So you're supposed to be Asian.
Yes,
I'm Asian.
Yeah.
you don't look at me. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, I would go, and I would make out with these 40-year-olds, and just drink unlimited access to drinks,
yeah.
And it was super glamorous until I went to one place and I had a drink, and I'd been drinking pretty often because I would go every weekend, and then I ended up getting roofied by some dude, and I got home safe. I didn't get nothing happened, but I woke up in my bed and I was whoa, I had half a drink, and next thing I know I'm on a different dimension. And I tried telling people about it, and they're like, oh, this promoter's really trustworthy. He's a club promoter, so who's letting 17-year-old girls?
Any idea who the culprit was?
I can't remember his name.
I just probably, yeah. Yeah.
But, yeah, so that was sort of, and then that kind of deterred me. Hyde, that's the other place's name, is Hyde on Sunset.
Yes, I remember Hyde. Yeah. Yes, Hyde. I'm 40, and I still know Hyde.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it was crazy. And that's all those young girls going clubbing. I hadn't even had sex yet. I was making out with these old dudes and stuff, and feeding into oh, this is going to make me feel better about myself. This is going to take away the pain of that situation.
The club culture, being exclusive,
yeah,
being let through the door, that feeling, I am better than, I am accepted, I am powerful. That, I get it. I DJed in my 20s. I was a professional DJ in clubs, and a DJ from 24 to 28, two to three nights a week, every single week for,
wow.
Yeah, nonstop in clubs. So I understand the exclusivity part about it, that awesomeness of go to the door guy. No, I know DJ, and then I know DJ Hurricane. That was my name. I know DJ Hurricane. And then they're like, oh, and they would come to the back saying, hey, DJ Hurricane, I'm like, yeah, it's cool. And then walk again. It's fuck yeah.
DJ Hurricane's a sick,
It is kind of sick, but the thing
it's
is
a little bit basic.
Beyond basic, though. do you know how I got my name?
How?
I got my name because I was in a meeting, and I just got asked to DJ this thing called AKIPA. AKIPA stands for All California Young People.
I'm sorry, my One Direction alarm.
It's all good.
Okay, we're good.
It's all good. So yeah, so I was DJing this thing called AKIPA, and that's All California Young People's Alcoholics Anonymous. It's this really big roundup convention, same exact word, they do once a year in California. And I just got hired to do this job in my hometown in the Bay Area.
Were you sober at that point?
Yeah, I was 20. I was a year sober. I got a year sober, and then I got asked to DJ this huge event, which is around 1,500, 1,800 people, maybe 2,000 people. They rent out a hotel. They block the rooms out. And I mean, when I share, I get really excited. I have a ball of energy. Mm-hmm. I'm like a swirling ball of energy, just a centrifuging, right? And I've been that way my entire life.
Yeah.
And then after I shared at a men's meeting, they chose the next guy. And then, hey, man, you're DJ Hurricane. And then that was my name because of the way that I shared. So I got my name from the meetings.
Okay, that's a little bit cooler.
Yeah, but what's not cool is that they're actually the OG DJ Hurricane is the DJ for the Beastie Boys. So my name is worthless.
Oh.
I'm not going to step on that guy. I can't.
No, there's...
I'm a peasant.
Yeah.
That guy's DJ Hurricane of the Beastie Boys.
DJ Hurricane of the Beastie Boys is not DJing at YPAW.
Yeah, he's definitely not. Yeah. So someone told me that. I'm like, oh, man. So, like, and I didn't even know. So people thought maybe I was trying to bite his name. No, I'm just crazy. I share kind of crazy. So I got my name because of that, you know?
Okay, I believe you.
Cool, thanks. So you're at Hyde and you're like, you got roofied. You're like, fuck that.
I got roofied at Bootsy Bellows.
Okay, Bootsy, I mean, then you're just like, cool, I'm cool off this for a minute.
Yeah, I was like, okay, I'm cool off this for a minute. And then I just like ended up stopped doing that because I was like, ooh, I'm too young to be doing this. Like there was like that sort of like awareness finally. And then I turned 18 and I like went back once more because I was like finally legal. Even though these like old dudes had already been like going after me.
Legal as in like I'm over 18. So if I get caught, it's still okay because I'm under 21.
Yeah.
That's super duper illegal that I'm under 17.
Like, yeah.
There's two levels of it.
There's two levels of illegal.
I can understand what you're saying. You know what? I'm still illegal, but like not that illegal. So it's all good.
You won't go to jail if you have sex with me, sort of like legal.
100. Now I understand. I'm not a pervert. So I mean, I am, but not like that, you know? So like I can understand a pervert being like, okay, yeah, she's legal now. So that gives me more possible access. So I get it now. Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. And then I like started going through like my alt phase where my mom died after like a couple weeks after I turned 18.
Did you know?
Yeah, she was in hospice.
Any day type shit?
Like what did you say?
Any day, like you knew at that time period. Oh, any day it could happen.
Yeah, okay, any day it could happen. It was September 13th, 2017, and It was a pretty amazing thing. Like when someone's like coming to the end of their lives, I don't know if you've ever heard of like the death rattle.
Yeah.
Where their like organs and everything are shutting down and they have their mouth open and they make this like rattling sound. And so the like doctors were like, yeah, this is it at any moment now. And my last moment with her, it was all of like my brothers and my dad, and we were in her room. And she was like sitting at the bed and she really loved Frank Sinatra. And so we played the song My Way for her. And that whole song is about like living the best life that you possibly could have and like not having any regrets. And as soon as that song ended, she died.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I can't listen to that song though, like without getting emotional. Yeah.
I mean, what does it sound like?
The death rattle?
Yeah.
It's like a snake hissing sort of thing. It's and like gargling. Like it's really
unique.
Yeah. I don't even know how I could describe it or even mimic it. It's like I just didn't realize. I mean, most people don't know that. But when someone is like deteriorating, like or coming to the end of their lives, like that the body just completely gives out. But yeah. And then She died and they came and the rabbis came and she was buried in a Jewish cemetery.
Yeah, so you're definitely Jewish.
Oh, I'm like super Jew.
That's super cool.
Yeah, I was like, I'm not like ish, like I'm Jew. Like I'm like, I was president of my Jewish youth group at my temple. And like
you're
did like conventions.
Jewish.
Yeah.
Jewish. I wanna.
Yeah, I was super Jewish.
That's super cool.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's just like so much a part of who I am. Like all my ancestors, as in like my great grandparents, were like Eastern European like Jews, who like came because there was all like nobody liked us there, the Holocaust, all that stuff, and so we all ended up here. I think in like the 20s is when, or like a little bit before the 1920s is when like my family started immigrating over here.
Okay.
But yeah, super Jewish.
What does a rabbi do when do they do a certain like thing, you know, or a ceremony when someone passes away at that time? Do you remember anything about that?
Yeah, there was like some prayers that you say. There's this thing called like the mourner's kaddish that you always say like when somebody dies. And then grieving in Judaism, like the day after, there's a thing called a shiva. And, like, shivas usually last a week, but my mom said before she, like, died and was cognizant, she's like, please don't have the shivas 2 days and then stop. Like, I don't want you guys to like have a whole week of doing this. It's too much work. So she was always a planner. So even before she died,
oh, I know I'm gonna. That's so.
Yeah.
That's funny to me.
She was hilarious. She was like a she did not give a shit sort of person. Like yeah. My friend was a redhead, and we were like 15 or something, and we were in the car, and she goes, she asked her if the carpets matched the drapes.
Wow, she sounds really funny.
Like, yeah, she was really funny and did not give a shit or a fuck like at all. And yeah, she was awesome.
Was she sober through program?
Yeah.
Cool, great.
Yeah. Awesome. So like when I sort of hit my bottom and I went to my first AA meeting, it was like 6 a.m. and I knew that I didn't know where to go, but I know she'd always talked about that. So I went there and then, yeah, it...
When is she on the EKG machine? The do 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 thing, right?
No.
Because I'm so ignorant. Like I think I see TV movies. I visit do like yeah. It ain't like that.
No, because we were in the house. So like okay. We were in my house and like
okay.
She was gonna die anyways. So there wasn't really any point in like
yeah.
Yeah, keeping track of all that stuff. For that's sure. A lot of for like dramatization.
Yeah. So yeah, I'm plagued by movies. But thank you for giving clarity.
Yeah.
Like it's not like that.
No, it's not. But I feel like in all the movies, like, so they don't have to, like, character development in, like, all the people have either dead moms or dead dads because that, like, chops off, like, a thing. Or that's, like, an easy sort of, like, narrative to have.
I thought of that. I'm terrible at English, so I think, okay.
Yeah. Like, Disney movies, if you look at a lot of the Disney movies, like, one of the parents is always dead or, like, a grandparent or something
okay.
In order to, like, further the plot. So,
wow. All right.
Yeah. So that I guess was with my my family. But yeah, after my mom died, I like a week later met this dude who was like around my age now, which
How?
Is crazy.
When?
Tinder.
Okay.
Yeah, I met him on Tinder.
What made you swipe? Height.
No, he was in a band.
Okay, band or height. Two other things. 6'2",
yeah.
6'2" or above. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I always run that shit. I mean, because it's true, you know? Like
it's 6'2" or above. It's like 6 foot or above and like plays music and
yeah.
Looks like they have chlamydia.
Yeah.
Like those were my standards. I'm trying to move past that, but.
Yeah. What kind of band?
Shitty music. I don't know. Like trying to be the Beatles, but like. Super not the Beatles.
So you didn't even like the music? You just liked the fact that he was in a band?
Yeah.
Got it. What instrument?
Guitar.
Okay.
He was a terrible singer. And like, I do music, but...
You sing. Okay, go on. We'll talk about that.
Yeah, I sing. But I do music and like, I was like, oh, I want to be with someone. But I've dated like my two relationships. Actually, almost most of my relationships have been with musicians. And... They never like respect the fact that I do music and I'm usually more talented than them. Not
it's,
to toot no, my own horn.
It's
but,
all good. I mean, keep yeah. It real. You know what I'm saying? It's what it is.
Yeah.
Things are what they are. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So like Tinder, you swipe because, you know, 6 foot?
Yeah.
And he's 6 foot. Wow. That's worth a swipe. 6 foot in band?
Yeah. It was worth a swipe. What I didn't know is that he lived in his friend's garage. At his friend's parents' house's
ooh.
Garage.
Ooh.
And yeah, we like, it was very fast. Like we kissed and like that night he was like, I love you. And no one had ever said that to me at that point. And I said, I don't love you back, but thanks. And it was just like, he was so infatuated with me. Like it got to the point where like, he didn't have any boundaries and he would like, stalk me and find places where I was going. Like if I was going to be with my friends and he'd act like he like just showed up or something.
Technically as your boyfriend still.
Yeah.
Okay. Give me an example. Let's get some details.
So my friend was coming to visit from out of town and I said, you know what? Like I'm having this day with her and she comes and I'm like, oh, we're going to go like do our thing. He saw on like Snapchat or Instagram or something that we were at Venice Beach. And magically, he showed up and he's like, I was just biking from the Palisades to Earth Cafe And I wanted to see what you guys were doing. And my friend thought that I had like planned it, but
does he go to Earth Cafe ever?
No.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he was like 23, 24 and I'd like just turned 18. Mm. So yeah, it was gross, but, I broke up with him. And then when I tried breaking up with him, he said that we were never in a relationship. You were just a groupie.
Wow. How long were you guys dating?
Like 3 months. It wasn't.
Okay.
Yeah. It wasn't anything super serious, yeah. But, I was also like, I took a year off before I went to college, and after I graduated high school. And so I was going to Spain for like 4 months to study abroad. So
wow.
It was good that I wasn't with him anyways.
Did he know that? I mean, obviously he learned quickly that your mom just passed away.
Yeah, he didn't care.
That's I'm bringing that up because he's a piece of shit. That's why I'm talking about it right now. Yeah.
Yeah, and he would like not, he did not care.
That's pretty wild. Wow.
Yeah. And that was like my first experience of like what I thought love was.
They get love bombed. And yeah. they get love bombed by some
and
shitty
then
musicians.
Stalked. Yeah. Stalked. Yeah, by the shitty musicians. And that would be a pattern for me, but it honestly still
it's a pattern
is.
For a lot of people. Yeah. No names, but like, you know, I know some people. So
yeah, it's like emotionally unavailable, sort of like basically they will ruin your life. And like, at least for me, I think for so long I had such like low confidence in myself that I was like primarily going for people who like I thought I deserved. Mm. But
that's pretty low to deserve a shitty guitar player.
I know. Musician.
That's cool though. I mean, I did the same thing. I my whole life I always dated girls that I knew would take advantage of me.
Yeah.
I would always just use them, let them use me. I would let them use me as a resource. I wasn't even a person.
Yeah.
You know, and so I can relate like trying to match what my worth was, you know?
That's
so.
Exactly what I feel like I've done like literally until not so long ago. Probably like in like last year is when I sort of like stopped doing that. Because I just like I kind of sometimes I got into a point like when I stopped drinking, I got into a point where I was using people as like drink. And then I would, like, use these people to try and, like, fill this, like, God-sized hole or fill this void or whatever.
Yeah.
And I just, like, kept going for these people who, like, treated me so awful or, like, didn't really want to be with me because it was that same thing of, like, okay, this is what I deserve. They're using me. But, like, in a way, I was using them.
But for me, I can relate, but I didn't even realize it.
Yeah.
Until now.
Oh, really?
I mean, I'm not saying now, but I'm saying like in hindsight, it wasn't like, oh, I know this is going to happen and it's okay. It's so insidious.
I
so
know.
So slowly how like the realization of what I'm really doing to myself.
It creeps up on you.
Yes.
It really creeps up on you because like we go for things that make us feel good. Like we're instant gratification. And so it's like, okay, this makes me feel good. This makes me feel good. But then like next thing you know, you're in a hole and you're like, can't, you're trying to get yourself out of this like terrible situation, but
yeah. So like, so you used for a small period of time.
Yeah. From when I was like 15 to I got sober when I was 22.
That is effing amazing. Wow.
Yeah. yeah, it just went really quick for me.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, I also think I'm really grateful that I got sober so young because of like fentanyl. Where it's like, it's not like you, I mean, you just, you don't know what you're.
Was fentanyl pretty prevalent when you got sober?
No, I feel like it was like right after I got sober.
Yeah, it wasn't around when I.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't around back then. Not back then, but it's like 4 or 5 years ago. Not really. So.
Yeah. And I think it just like a little bit after is when it happened. And I'm like so grateful because I was just, if you gave me something to snort, I would snort it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was like, people are like, what was your drug of choice? And I was like, free ones. Like people just give them to me. I will take them. I will
not ask you.
Whatever you
have, I'm a trash can. Hook me up.
Yeah, exactly.
That's pretty, you're lucky. Someone might have given you something when you died or giving you something where you got really addicted and really, or something like that, you know?
Yeah. Well, I did. And that was my psychiatrist. Yeah. So,
so how, do you know the dosages of what you were taking? If you could think about right now, so I can, we can see how high you titrated up.
Yeah, it was like a pretty low dosage. So I was like, okay, if I do two, I'll kind of feel things. And then I like stopped like getting any effects. So I would just like be like, okay, I would ration it out. And I'd be like, if I have this whole bottle, it's going to make me feel this way. And then I would like convince my doctors continuously to like prescribe it to me. And I did like an intensive outpatient thing the first time I tried to get sober, and it was on Zoom, which is a really effective way to get sober, obviously. Because they don't drug test you. And I convinced the psychiatrist there to prescribe me Xanax.
What IOP?
What?
What IOP?
Clearview.
Clearview, okay.
Yeah.
All right. So you got him.
I got him.
Okay, let's play a role play. So, like, I'm the psych, and what would you say to me? Say, hi, Molly, how are you?
I'm so anxious. Like, I'm so sad about, like, everything, like, with my mom, and it's like so hard to deal with. And like, I have this anxiety that like, I can't get over. Like, and I think the only, like, I need my Xanax. Like, that's the only thing that's gonna like give me some calm so I can like work through this stuff I'm going through and just really butter them up. And like, using this terrible thing that happened to me, like, to my advantage.
What can they really say, you know?
Yeah.
Like, you're lying. Your mom dying doesn't mean shit. Like, or whatever, like, the evil, whatever.
Yeah.
What do they retort with?
Yeah, they can't.
What would they say? They would just say, yeah, okay, I get it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, you can't, yeah.
Yeah, and it's like, I was totally manipulating the situation.
Totally.
Yeah.
That's the easy one.
Yeah.
Because that's some real fucked up shit that happened. Yeah. How fuck yeah it is.
Yeah. I always got it, yeah, I got it. It was always easy for me to get because I would just like tell them that and they're like, okay.
You know, like, oh, I failed my final. It's like, it's some serious life shit that's real.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, crazy. So Clearview, IOP. So then what happens after that?
Well, that was after Spain. So that was like, after that, I ended up going to rehab. I did like a month, like 30 days, like just on my own doing AA. Well, not on my, like, going to meetings and stuff. But
Sherman Oaks?
No, I lived in San Diego.
Okay.
I did a lot of like geographics. I lived in Oregon for 2 years where I went to college. And then COVID happened. And then I like was in my dorm room doing like psychedelics and Xanax and like mushrooms and started hearing voices and stuff.
What college?
University of Oregon.
Oh, you went to University of Oregon.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, wow. I went to University of Oregon for 2 years. And then I like had to drop out because I had a lot of like issues and my friends were kind of like trying to get me to leave because I was so insufferable to be around where they're like, you need help. And like, I remember, one of my last times with them, we were like sitting in our living room, like, cause my best friends were also my roommates and we were sitting in the living room and they were like passing around the bong and like drinks. And I was like, gonna take like a bong rip and then I was gonna like try and drink and they were yelling at me. They're like, no, Molly, no, like basically getting upset at me. And I was like, guys, I'm fine. And they were like, no, like you can't do this because it's gonna fuck you up.
So the ones getting fucked up are telling you that it's gonna, so you're definitely the lower companion.
Yeah.
Yeah, I get it.
Yeah. I was so awful to be around. I was so like insufferable. I was so like, I just couldn't. It put me in such like a dark place. And so I left and then I did like the intensive outpatient and I basically got him to prescribe me Xanax and I told my like therapist that I was sober. And then she ended up being my therapist after the program and I was with her for a year. And the whole time we were together, she thought I was sober because I was telling her that. So I knew I had a problem because I was lying to my therapist about the fact that I wasn't sober.
Yeah.
And you're like paying that person so you can be completely honest with them.
It's a very common theme. I'm paying to lie to you.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm paying to pretend to make you feel like I'm okay.
Yeah.
I'm doing everything I should be doing, but I'm not. And I'm lying to you.
Exactly.
I get it.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I always needed like validation from people and I hated the feeling of like disappointing people.
Like if you don't tell me I'm fucked up, that means I'm getting away with it. It validates me that I'm okay.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah.
You're not going to say, hey, you don't really seem that way. But okay, great. Good job. Congratulations. You know, like whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I ended up like acting like I was fine. I'm like, oh my God, like time for me to go to go back to school. I got into UC San Diego. And so I was like, okay, I'm going to San Diego. That's where my mom went to school. So it was going to be this like whole transformative thing. Like now that I was like better and I wasn't, and I like went back there and I just like started like drinking alone and like smoking weed alone in my room and like going back into my old habits.
Right.
And like I started doing like acid, and then I got addicted to poppers.
Really?
Yeah.
Talk about it.
Like I would be in my room and every like I thought that that was not relapsing or that wasn't really
what
using.
What is a popper?
It's like this like chemical. It's like primarily used by gay men for anal sex.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, and you buy it at sex shops and you like open up the vial and you like sniff it and it gives you this like little head rush. And so I would do it like probably like every 20 minutes because I was like gave up everything and I thought that that was like kind of like, okay, this is what I can do. But yeah, I ended up like just having terrible headaches and like, I was like, wow, this is really sad that I'm like sitting alone in my room, like doing poppers just to get high.
To pretend that I'm sober.
Exactly.
Ooh.
Yeah. Wow. It was very dark.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, it didn't, San Diego didn't fix the problem. And so I ended up like going in AA meeting and I mean, it got me to stop using and drinking, but I was so depressed because I couldn't understand how I was supposed to function like that. And so I ended up going to, like inpatient rehab and, stayed there for a month. And then that got me like into AA. But like, I don't know, I finally like realized that like I could try and like move all these places, but like it wasn't gonna fix like what was going on inside of me because like it was not the location. Like I always wanted to put like my alcoholism and addiction onto other people and say like, this is the reason why I'm this way. It's like because of my mom, it's because of my dad, it's because of like the shitty boyfriend I had, it's because of like these mean friends or whatever. But then like ultimately at the end of the day, I realize I'm like, oh, it's me. It's like, I'm the one who like starts the chaos and use it. Like, yeah, it's terrible. I went through those things, but like, I don't think you can, no matter what you go through, I don't think it gives you the excuse to be a shitty human.
Yeah. The least common denominator, the LCD, is
me.
Right.
Yeah.
me too. Yeah. I get it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's easy to like blame everything else and just like victimize yourself. And then like, you kind of have to step back and be like,
the problem, not the problem. The thing is though, is that those things are powerful and they have good reason to be valid, but they're not valid enough to destroy your life doing drugs and drinking.
Exactly.
You know, like, you know, your mom, like me having MS or my mom leaving when I was four, yeah. You know, all these crazy things. Like, it's like normal people don't say, okay, I'm going to go like go get high and destroy my life right now. Like normal people don't do that. That's why I think we have a special class that we go to in order to like for us to understand each other.
Yeah, definitely. I'm so grateful to be sober and to have that outlook on life and like have these tools. I think like it's also like with like, I don't know, I was thinking like, what's the point of doing all this like treatment or like doing all these things to try and like fix these problems if you're not actually like gonna enjoy life? I don't know. My mom, like before she died, kind of instilled with me like this idea of like enjoy life one day at a time. And she would always say one day at a time. And I didn't know that that was like an AA for
now years. You do.
Now I do.
She's not a genius.
No. And she would like say the serenity prayer to me when like all of it felt so complicated. And it's like so crazy, like going back and hearing all these things and realizing that these were all lessons that my mom tried to instill in me growing up. And like, she's been with me like this whole like time.
Any outer body stuff that you knew she was there?
Yeah, I think so. Like I just, whenever I see like a butterfly, I think of like, it's my mom there, because it's always in those moments where I need to see it most. But I don't know. It's just like, it's not that I've seen her, but I've like felt her presence. Like when I'm like in like the rooms, or I'm like around like sober people, and like they just like, I just realize like my whole like upbringing has literally been the fundamentals of like sobriety and of like sayings and stuff, which is like stuff my mom, I always thought she just made up, but I didn't realize would be like a life that I would also like be living.
That's really cool.
Isn't it?
Hell yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. It's just crazy because she so bad was like, I don't want you to like end up like I was. Like, I don't want you to like, you know, you're susceptible to it and stuff. But like, I was like, that's why I ended up here.
Was she described like this? Cause this is alcoholism and this is this and this is that. Would she be very like informative, like a teacher? Or would she just tell you in generally like kind of like a generic thing?
She just said, don't drink. Because
that's the realest A shit ever. Then.
Yeah.
No, I'm saying like, no, that's the realest shit ever. Because
yeah,
it's like, because you have alcoholism. Read this page on this big book, and you're gonna know that you're not a hard drinker. You're the real alcoholic or some bullshit. Yeah. Like that. You know. Like,
yeah. Exactly. She was like, just don't drink. Like, I don't want you to like, just don't drink. And I was like, okay. So I mean, she was right.
Right.
Yeah.
And let's say, if she did tell you, read this part in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous and then tell me what kind of drinker you are, would you have a different perception of AA right now? If she kind of like put it down your throat as if like it was some sort of like...
I don't know. I can't, because I don't think that... I really think that the sobriety thing was something I had to come to on my own, because she was like... So when I was growing up was so much like, don't drink, that I was like, oh, I need to find this out for myself. And... I found myself right where she always said that
I'd be. She followed all the directions. Yeah. And now you're here.
Exactly.
That is amazing.
Yeah. I just know that she would be proud of me, but she would also be like, I can't believe. I think she would say, I told you so.
How rad is that?
Yeah.
Yeah. Any program with your dad or no problems? I mean, no issues with that?
My dad is a normie. My dad is like...
Poor guy.
I know.
Oh my God.
My dad is like so sweet, and like he can like have like half a glass of wine or like one glass of wine and be like, okay, I'm good. And like, so we didn't ever have alcohol in the house growing up, because like my dad didn't really drink. And he was like a normie, so it didn't really... affect him. And then my mom was sober, so she's like, why would we have alcohol in the house? And so I didn't grow up like going to events with like alcohol, unless sometimes with like family events. But like in Judaism, there is like a big drinking culture, especially because we have like every Friday night, like one of like part of our like rituals is to drink like the wine. And we would drink grape juice because we were kids, but yeah.
I celebrated Beth Teshuva. What's the Jewish rehab? Come on. At Beth Teshuva, I celebrated Passover, or like what?
Beit Teshuva is Beth the Jewish rehab.
Okay, I went to Beit Teshuva and I celebrated, what's the big thing every year for
Passover?
Yeah, Passover, right?
Like the Seder, like,
And I drank the grape juice, and I did this with their thing. You know, you go this and that, you go your hand over their hand, and you drink the salty, like parsley.
Yeah.
And you eat like a filleted fish.
Yeah.
And then, you know, what else do you have to do? And then like, yeah.
You eat the hard boiled eggs. Yes. And then like, it all is about the story of Jews, like coming out of Egypt.
I got a crash course on Judaism, unbeknownst to me. My friend's like, hey, you want to go to a dinner party? I'm like, cool, dude. We end up going to Beit Teshuva, and then I'm sitting there learning all about Judaism. It was pretty rad though.
Yeah. I love like all the rituals that we have, and like it's so funny because I feel like I'm, because there's I think there's a lot of Jews that are like live in LA from LA, so like I've always grown up around Jewish people, but like now with like a lot of the transplants, they're usually not Jewish, and so they're like, I don't know, I just feel like it's weird like being around sometimes, and especially being sober, being around like the Jesus people, because that's just like not my thing. So,
and that's why this place is great.
Yeah, exactly.
You have your thing, I got my thing.
Yeah.
We all hang out, we're all cool, right?
Yeah. Yeah, we do things different. And like, I love being Jewish. Like, I love...
Why?
I love, like, all the holidays. I love, like, the fact that, like, we don't burn in hell. Like, that we don't have, like, this, like, eternal, like, punishment. And that so much of, like, our principles are based off of helping other people and, like, doing, like, acts of service. I just love that. And I love, like, the community and, like, it's very musical. And I think it just feels like home. It's where I feel comfortable. And I think also the fact that, like, my family is here because they couldn't be Jewish where they were. And, like, it's not just, like, my religion. It's my, like, culture. It's, like, how I grew up. It's, like, the values that are instilled in me. It's, like, in my DNA. Like, that's who I am.
That's a rad answer.
Yeah.
That's a good answer. You're hired. Yeah.
I'm hired to be the Jewish representative of the world.
Okay. So, like, what's your first acid? How much acid have you done?
I think I've done it, like, I did it, like, 6 or 7 times.
Me too. Yeah.
Yeah.
What's the first time you did acid?
The first time I did acid was when I was living in Oregon. And my friend and I, we had, like, a guy who lived upstairs who had acid. And he was doing it. And we were taking dabs. And I was, like, dabs in itself, like, are...
Wow.
Yeah.
That's not even weed anymore. It's like crack.
It is. It's like
you have the crack. You have the crack torch.
Yeah.
It's like, you know.
Yeah, it's pretty insane.
Yeah.
And we were, like, doing dabs. And then he was like, yeah, I have acid. Like, I'm going to do it. And then I'm like, oh, I guess we can, like, try it. And I was like, okay, let's do it. And we did it. And, you know, we lived by nature. And we went on, like, this amazing walk and had this, like, beautiful experience and, like, listened to music and did art. And I was like, wow, I want to feel this again.
So you enjoyed it?
I enjoyed it.
Wow.
Okay. A lot. And then, like, I wanted to do it again. So I was like, 2 weeks later, I was like, hey, like, can I get it from this person? And then I did it again and I did it by myself, but I was, like, being supervised by a friend.
Yeah. Babysitter. I get it. Yeah. That's pretty common. Yeah.
And then I wanted to do it again. And she's like, dude, like, chill. You can't do it all the time. And then I found a friend who had mushrooms. And then I had mushrooms, but that made me, like, go insane.
Let's talk about it.
Like, I think when I, like, had to leave school and got into this, like, super deep depression was when I did mushrooms. Like, that is when, like, I had this click of, like, my brain was just different and not in, like, a good way or, like, a spiritual experience sort of way, just in, like, hell. Like, it was just, like, I was so, like, I could hear voices. Like, I mean, psychosis, essentially. Like,
do you think the acid helped progress you into psychosis? Or
I think the mushrooms did.
Okay.
And then I was smoking weed constantly, and that was just making that worse. And I would, like, go into the bathroom and I'd hear voices, and I'd, like, think that people were, like, talking about me, and I'd, like, get all paranoid. And then I would, like, be alone in my apartment.
Me too. I get it. Yeah.
Yeah. But I stopped. I don't hear voices now that I'm sober.
I don't hear voices either. Yeah. Sometimes. I don't hear voices either sometimes.
Yeah.
Right. Sometimes.
Sometimes.
It depends, you know.
Yeah. I did speed when I was in.
Meth.
Yeah.
Meth. Speed. Let's go. Yeah. Let's go.
I know it's meth.
Yeah. You want to feel kind of dainty? Like, I did speed.
Yeah, I know.
I did speed.
But when I did meth, and I like, was telling people that I did speed, and then I looked up what speed was and realized I was, like, I was doing meth.
Wow.
And I was, like...
Was someone trying to try to bamboozle you?
Yeah.
Fuck them. That's not... No. That's,
I know. Well, no, but the thing
was... Why try opium and they gave him fentanyl? Like, that type of shit. That's
no.
Like, I mean, like, that's an analogy, you know?
Well, I don't even think so because they said speed and I thought speed was Adderall. Like, I thought it was just, like...
Yeah.
But it wasn't. Like, when I was in Spain, my friends had gotten... They're like, oh, we're going to get speed from this, like, connect we have. And they got this, like, whole bag of, like, speed, meth. And then...
What did it look like?
It was white powder.
It's powder?
Yeah.
Okay.
And then we, like, snorted it. And I thought it was cocaine because I had only thought that that's the only thing that was a white powder that you snort.
Yeah.
But it was not cocaine.
What do you think about it?
I'm definitely, like, I think because of, like, my sort of, like, Xanax addiction, I wasn't much of, like, an uppers person. But it kept me up. And I was like doing this thing called Carnival in Spain. And my friends and I had to stay up for like from like 10 a.m. to like 6 a.m. the next day because we didn't have a hotel and we were in a different city. And like everyone was like staying up all night. And so they're like, oh, this will help us get through it. And I was just like, okay, cool. And I was just doing it, drinking, pissing in the streets, shitting in the streets, throwing up in the streets. And then while that was happening, we like found a rave like randomly and we like went to the rave and I started making out with these random dudes and like Carnival, like you dress up in costumes. Like
what is that? What is that?
I think it's like really big in Brazil, but in Spain, it's in this place called Cadiz, which is like a small beach town. And like, all I know is people like dress up and they like party all night.
That's cool.
And we did that. And then like we found the rave or whatever. And like all I can remember this is like I started making out with this dude who was in a Mickey Mouse costume and he like had the gloves and he started fingering me on the dance floor with the Mickey Mouse glove.
Glove.
Yes.
Really?
Yeah.
Could you see his face?
Yeah, but he did have like a drawn on nose and whiskers.
Okay. That's kind of, is that scary? Or I don't know. I'm not sure. Was it like cool? I mean, like what were your...
I think I was like wanted it.
Right. Okay.
And then my friends just made fun of me and I woke up with, well, I didn't wake up with regret because I didn't sleep for 3 days.
Yeah.
Like I thought I was like, oh, this was so exhausting. Now it's time to like go back to like my like home. And I was like living with a host family. So like my host family's apartment, I went there and I was like trying to fall asleep and I couldn't. And I was like, why can't I fall asleep? And I like didn't, I had never done anything besides like smoking weed and like Xanax. And so I didn't know like really what I was getting myself into.
Mm.
Yeah. But I never thought that I would do like meth. It just kind of happened.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You did it in a way that's like snorting it, you know?
Yeah.
You didn't like the super hyper addictive way of smoking it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cause it's so compulsive because of the entire ritual of it all.
Yeah.
You know? So it's grateful that you only did the powder.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. It just wasn't like, I don't know. And then I like did cocaine in college, but.
What do you think?
It was the same thing. And I honestly am like wondering if I have ADHD because like I feel like it didn't do as much for me as like the downers did.
Mm.
Like the downers, like the Xanax and like the alcohol, like the depressants, or maybe I was just so depressed that I like needed that to like feel sane, or at least I thought I needed that.
In all seriousness, there is an underlying thing that like, yeah, my mom has passed away and I'm taking these drugs because of that.
Yeah.
There's always a baseline.
Yeah.
Not like forever, like, before I take this, I'm thinking about my mom, but like, it creates this kind of, this like baseline of that kind of morose.
Yeah.
You know? So I think that's fair.
Yeah. I think it's fair too.
Yeah.
yeah. I don't know. I'm glad that I like figured it out so young too.
I'm glad you did. I'm happy for you.
Yeah.
I wasted so much of my life.
When did you get sober?
I got sober this time in December again. No, December 27th.
When did you like start trying to get sober?
Oh, when I was 18.
18.
Yeah, I came down to Tarzana Treatment Center when I was 18.
Mm-hmm.
And that was kind of like the start of everything. So in the Valley, in Reseda.
Really?
I grew up in the Valley. I spent 10 years of my life in the Valley. And but I totally regret it. I can't believe I wasted 10 years of my life in the Valley, dude.
Did you like grow up like you were a child in the Valley?
No, 18. No, I was in the Bay Area. Then when I was 18, I came down and I flew down here to go to rehab. And then from 18, then I just been down here in LA since. But I never knew I could live on the West Side.
Yeah,
I didn't know. I really wasted my life. Sorry. I wasted 10 years of my life.
I was born there, so I, yeah.
Wasted 10 years of my life driving on Ventura Boulevard. I can't believe it. You know, it's just a total misery. I live in Woodland Hills.
That's miserable though.
I lived there for 8 years.
Like I'm almost in Studio City and Studio City's like cool now.
You're good. I mean, I lived in Studio City.
Yeah.
I lived off of Coldwater Canyon and Moore Park.
We were neighbors.
Really?
Yeah, I live around there.
Yeah, I live there, and I was so I lived at this place with this woman, mm-hmm. and like a 50-year-old woman, and for some reason she like was into me or whatever, and I ended up just like kind of like taking over her apartment, and I lived there for maybe like 4 months. Mm-hmm. It was pretty wild, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's I've talked about it before, but so she and like I had a whole bunch of steroids. I was selling steroids. I was on a ton of steroids. I had a whole bunch of drugs, mm-hmm. whole bunch of steroids, and I was just using her for her money. And in the end, like I planned this escape with this other girl.
Yeah.
To leave mm-hmm. with her and then be with her, but all my stuff was in her apartment. Her family owns these apartment buildings, like 7 of them.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And then what happened was, and I was like, yo, I was like, dude, I got to get the fuck out of here. I left. Before I came back to get all my stuff, she locked me out of the house.
Oh, God.
So she had all of my stuff, right? Yeah. Check it out.
How old were you?
I was, this was like 2000, I was 36, maybe.
And she was like in her 50s?
Yes. But then, okay. But the thing was, is like, I was like, dude, a week later, mm-hmm. people are sending me text messages like, yo, do you want to buy this shit? And I'm like, okay. And I opened it up. I'm like, yo, that's my shit. I'm like, what the fuck is this? So all my stuff is getting redistributed out to everybody else. I'm like, what the fuck is going on here, right? And then at that point, I had a friend named Odai. Rest in peace, Odai. He got hit and killed in a car. Mm-hmm. Well, that's what they supposedly said. He died a couple years ago. And he always told me about, oh, yeah, I love robbing houses. That's what I do for fun. And like, I'm not a criminal. I mean, yeah. I am, but I'm like, I'm not that leveled up where like crime is like that interesting to me where I would say like, oh, I love robbing houses for fun.
Yeah. It's like, but more to get high sort of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I've been around, in general, I would never do that.
Yeah.
You know? So even if I was high.
Yeah.
But then I mean, friends have lower bottoms. So like, I was like, okay, all my shit's in there. Oda keeps talking about that. And I didn't really realize how serious he really was. Because there are real criminals out there.
Like, yeah.
Real people that do really bad shit, you know? And you know, so I was like, Odai. I didn't really realize the implications of it all. I was like, Odai, hey, I want you to rob this woman's house. She has all my stuff in there. She has all my steroids. You know, she has money. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
She has my cologne collection. She has my clothes. She has everything. He's like, and then he starts asking me questions. Like, okay, all right. Well, what time does she go to work? What time does she come back? And he's asking all these really questions. And suddenly I realized that I'm in a situation. I'm like, oh, maybe this guy might really rob this woman's house.
Yeah. Because
he's asking poignant questions that actually make sense. Before you know it, man, you know, I left. And before you know it, the woman's father calls me. I wish I still had the voicemail. I really wish I did. He said, you better bring all that shit. I'm going to cut your balls off. I'm going to rip your arms off. I'm going to rip your limbs off, motherfucker, if you don't bring back everything that you stole right now. And then I was like, fuck. I was in my head. And I'm like, I'm feeling kind of like, whoa, like this really is happening.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And then before you know, then all my stuff gets redistributed. And like people are texting me saying this, you want to buy this? I'm like, no, I don't want to buy that shit. That's my shit.
Yeah.
But that was my experience in Studio City. It was crazy.
That's terrible. I wouldn't want to be in the valley, back in the valley if I were you.
Yeah.
Also, let me check the time.
Yeah.
Because
what time is it?
It's 7:17.
Okay, yeah, we should get out of here.